Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, live from LeBron's new home, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. You know, there's certain moments in life that you spend years in anticipation, just counting the days down, waiting. You can't believe it's almost like Christmas. I mean, you're circling it on the calendar. You really, really want that day to come. And once it comes, it feels like a tornado or a hurricane of excitement. I mean, it's just overwhelming glee, and all the emotions are going through your body. It could be a little disorienting. But in that moment, Andrew, you know that for the rest of your life, you know, when you're old and you're a grandfather or a great-grandfather, you're going to be able to tell all of your descendants about where you were at that moment.
Yep.
You know, Andrew, I'm thinking about, you know, certain things, you know, maybe like Michael Jordan's shrug against the Blazers or his pull-up jumper over Brian Russell, you know, maybe the fall of the Berlin Wall. You know, I certainly remember where I was, you know, on the tragic night that JFK was assassinated. I mean, those kinds of things stick with you forever. And this was one of those moments for me. I don't know if it was for you, Andrew, but I thought it was a very classy rollout on social media. They didn't make that big of a deal about it, and yet it exploded with worldwide interest. I mean, you could just tell there was fans on every continent in total rapture at this news. And of course, Andrew, I'm speaking about Giannis Antetokounmpo becoming the cover boy for NBA 2K19. What a milestone in his life.
Oh, my God.
What a milestone for Giannis Inc. What a milestone for you and I. It just feels so great that we finally, you know, reached this moment. And I can't wait to be sitting back in like 2068 and telling myself, man, 50 years ago, I was there when the big news hit that Giannis was going to be on the cover of NBA 2K19.
You're the worst. You know, the scariest words of this podcast, or every now and then I'll call you to record an open floor and you will say to me, just hang with me, I've got an intro ready for us. I just have to kind of grit my teeth. But yeah, look, I didn't catch that news with Giannis. I'm very happy for him. Good for him. Did you see his tweet to Skip Bayless last night?
No, what was that?
Well, Skip Bayless came out and said Joel Embiid is now the best player in the Eastern Conference. And Giannis quote tweeted him and was like, thank you for the motivation, Skip. I'll be working all summer. And it was great. I was like, let's go. Because Giannis probably is the best player in the Eastern Conference now, for the record. This is a weird place to start the podcast, but I guess it's on brand for us. It's going to be a big year for Giannis Inc.
Skip, don't poke that Greek bear. He's coming back 7'6", 400 pounds of sheer muscle.
This guy's
going to be dunking from the three-point line. He can't fix his jumper, sure, but he'll just jump straight from the three-point line and dunk at the first three-point dunk in NBA history. But, you know, all jokes aside, obviously, the news of the day, the year, the millennium, you know, I think it's LeBron going to the Lakers. Really tough call there by me, but I'm going to go ahead and say that's the real headline.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we've known this was coming for several weeks, and for the past 4 or 5 days, the whispers got much louder that it was already done, but none of that really registered for me, and thinking about LeBron and the Lakers felt pretty underwhelming, like as recently as a couple days ago, but then the closer we came to the actual decision, the more passionate I became about it. In a number of different ways, actually. So I'm excited to talk about it. I have a bunch of questions that we could talk through. I mean, this is kind of chaos because we're doing this on short notice, so there's only a handful of listener questions in here, but I've just got some random talking points for us, and then we can hit other free agency questions at the end. But let's just bounce all over the place. You know, there's a lot here.
Yeah, I have a few thoughts on LeBron. I have been thinking about him a little bit here over the last 24 hours. So let's do it.
Okay. So first question comes from Ben, who says, okay, guys, let's cut to the chase. When Lance Stephenson loses game one of the Western Conference semifinals by dribbling out the clock with the game tied, how quickly does LeBron demand a trade to San Antonio? And look, the reason I'm starting there is because as the months and years pass, we will forget that we'll forget what like Sunday night actually felt like. And Lance Stephenson is probably not going to make or break this Lakers era with LeBron. But I have to say this. I was very high on the Lakers front office all year long. I've said as much on this podcast. I think they're much smarter than they get credit for. But as this, as LeBron to the Lakers became kind of a foregone conclusion, I became a little bit more pessimistic on how this is going to play out in a basketball context. And not only that, to follow up signing LeBron with the deal for Lance Stephenson, the 1 year, $9 million to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and then the deal for JaVale McGee, who honest to God is probably my least favorite basketball player in the NBA. I'm not high on this. It's not a great sign. It's not like a death blow, but it's not great. So what do you think?
Well, I think one great measuring stick for, you know, his supporting cast, Andrew, it's something that you've pointed out over the years. The Lakers fans love the edits, you know, the Photoshops of players sure. in the Lakers jersey. And it's unbelievable that, you know, five or six really hardworking years of Lakers edits produced LeBron finally in a Lakers jersey. So, you know, congratulations to those guys. Lots of hours were spent slaving away over those masterpieces. But let me tell you this, Andrew, it's a bad sign when his supporting cast, the main guys that they're able to lock up with him, were never even Photoshopped into Lakers jerseys because they're not good enough to even, you know, bother with the time on Photoshop.
Well,
I mean, have
yeah.
you seen at any point over the last 4 years anyone Photoshopping Lance Stephenson into a Lakers jersey or JaVale McGee into a Lakers jersey? Andrew, they will put you and I into Lakers jerseys. They're that thirsty for talent here over the last 4 years, and they never stoop that low. And I think the big takeaway from that 24-hour period that you're talking about is the absence of Paul George to me. I said yeah. this last summer when Cleveland was trying to acquire him. I said this when, you know, basically throughout this tenure as LeBron was trying to keep up, you know, with the Warriors, he needed a Paul George or, you know, a player on that level to be a Kevin Durant stopper. Now, that could still be Kawhi Leonard, but the fact that Paul George didn't even give the Lakers a formal meeting, he didn't even really consider the possibility of teaming up with Los Angeles, says to me that, and, you know, he's going back to an Oklahoma City situation, which is good, but not great by any
yeah.
stretch, you know?
Good, but not great and is a good way to put it.
And he's not cashing out some just insane contract, right? I mean, you add all of those things up, and I think it says a little bit about the Lakers front office ability to recruit here. But I also think it says a lot, and maybe even more, about LeBron James's sort of ability to recruit, to attract talent, to still be that centerpiece, that queen on the chessboard in the NBA offseason. I don't think that LeBron has slipped that much on the court. But, Andrew, I think he's starting to slip with his influence with his fellow players. You look at Kyrie Irving's decision to leave, basically bolt last year. You look at Chris
sure.
Paul having a quick re-signing in Houston, never really considered teaming up on the banana boat, which a lot of people mention. You look at Paul George, just poof, I'm going to go party with Nas in the absolute middle of nowhere rather than consider,
come on.
You know,
take
being
it easy, take it easy. Oklahoma City, I've heard from a number of people, is better than people realize.
Hey, I like it there. I'm just saying that party was in the middle of nowhere, Andrew. Come
right.
on.
Don't knock the boot barn. That's all I'm saying.
That's a fact. Hey, I got a Banjo Museum membership, okay? Don't try to, like, outflank me on the OKC, love. But my point is this. Paul George basically blinking at the idea of having, being that number two guy to LeBron on this uh-huh. huge platform says more about LeBron to me than anything else. He's just at a different stage of his career. You know, in 2012, he could have put together any team that he wanted. In 2014, he snaps his fingers and he snubs Andrew Wiggins at his letter with Lee Jenkins. And boom, poof, out of nowhere comes Kevin Love. I think we're in a different stage of LeBron James's career. I don't think we can avoid that, and I don't think we should beat around the bush about that.
Yeah, I think I agree with some of that, certainly. I want to be very clear. I'm not using the Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee signings as an excuse to like tee off on LeBron or the Lakers front office. It did kind of give me pause, though. I'm not going to congratulate Pelinka and Magic for their brilliance just yet, and strictly because of those signings. It was like being in the middle of a lucid dream last night. Like, holy shit, they're really signing Lance? What? However, your broader point is well taken, and it's one of the reasons I'm actually excited about this LeBron Lakers era. It's going to be weird, and I think it's going to be more challenging than a lot of us thought even a week ago or 2 weeks ago when everybody was photoshopping Paul George and Kawhi Leonard into Lakers uniforms. I think the PG thing is interesting because we can get to playoff P and how he's wired later in the podcast, but I think your concern is valid as insofar as like LeBron is from a different generation than a lot of the guys that he's going to be recruiting when he's out in LA. And, you know, he's not that much older than Paul George. I think he's only like 4 or 5 years older, but he's almost, I mean, Kawhi Leonard's 27, LeBron's 34. Like, and the way the NBA works is generations sort of shift every 3 or 4 years. Like Steph and Westbrook are from a different generation than LeBron. And like the banana boat guys are all on the way out of the league. And if I were an up-and-coming superstar, I don't know if I would want to go play with LeBron. And in that respect, and you made this comparison over the weekend, I don't know whether you wrote it, but you made it to me as we talked this through. Like, there's a non-zero chance that LeBron kind of becomes Kobe for a new generation in LA, where, like, he is universally respected as one of the best players in the league, which Kobe was, even like until the last season or two. Yeah. Everyone
even
still
years
loved.
Even years after he still was in that crew, he had that tag.
Yeah, and players always respected him, but they didn't really want to go play with him and be second fiddle to him. And LeBron is gonna have to prove that he can kind of adapt his game to empower some of the younger guys around him. And you know, he's not going to be able to be the guy he was in Cleveland, where Kyrie and Love were basically marginalized the whole time. Which is to say, it's about to get a lot more interesting. Because I don't know whether he can do that, but it's going to be a really interesting test for him.
On this idea of the generational gap, I mean, I remember very vividly in Kobe's last season here in LA, I went to an event that was put on by American Express for like platinum cardholders. I was there as media. And, you know, there's all these sort of, you know, it's very like fancy. Everyone's drinking wine and looking very cool and very hip. And yeah. Kobe's up on stage. You know, he had flown his helicopter to the event, right? He's up on stage in a full suit, you know, talking about the Lakers glory days with guys like Robert Horry. And they're just yucking it up, having a great time. And that same night, the story about D'Angelo Russell basically videotaping Nick Young and putting it on the internet broke.
I remember that.
That was the ultimate generation gap moment, where it's just like you could just picture Kobe flying home on the helicopter, sort of looking down upon his city and just being in absolute disgust at like what has the next generation become. And I think LeBron's not.
Hold on, I would add though, those Lakers years were super super dark. But watching Kobe's disgust in the face of like some of D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young's antics were some of the only bright spots we got from that year or two at the end of Kobe's career. It's just watching him be like, get out of my face. I can't stand all of you. I don't know how I ended up here. It was great.
Yeah, and I guess my point there is he didn't just arrive at that sort of cynical version of himself, you know, by accident. It took years of, you know, him aging and the other guys being younger and, you know, trends evolving and so on and so forth. I mean, they had to beg Kobe to get on Twitter, you know, whenever it was 3 or 4 years ago. So he ended up there as part of a, you know, a natural evolution process. And I guess my concern with LeBron is obviously he's not at the same stage as Kobe was during that last retirement year. But yeah. I was kind of hoping he would still really be in true championship mode, like he said during the playoffs, for a little while longer. And when I look at this move, even in a best case scenario where they add a Kawhi Leonard or they add a DeMarcus Cousins, it's very hard for me to see the Lakers being a championship team in 2019. I think best case scenario, they're sort of in that mix in 2020. And then at that point, I think you're starting to worry, is LeBron still in that window where he can be the number one guy on a true contender with given all of the other young stars and teams that have sort of accumulated around the league? And so to me, you know, going back to the questioner's point about, well, will he demand a trade to San Antonio? You know, the answer is no. This is what LeBron has signed up for. This is what he has prioritized. He's said, I want to go to LA, be on the biggest stage, have the number one selling jersey, be number one in all-star votes, you know, be potentially back into the MVP race next year if he can kind of lead the Lakers into, you know, good playoff positioning. And he's essentially, you know, just changed the conversation. So it's no longer about LeBron versus the Warriors and is he going to be able to, you know, pull off a miracle in the finals. Now it's about LeBron becoming the biggest and richest and most influential star imaginable. And I guess, you know, part of me, the basketball side of me, is disappointed. You know, I would want to see LeBron kind of share my quote-unquote values and kind of highlight a team like San Antonio or maybe even Houston, given the way last season played out, as the place where he could really chase Michael Jordan's six rings, where he could keep basketball and winning sort of at the front of his attention. And I think with this decision, this is not necessarily a huge knock on him. I'm not saying this in a negative way, but I do think it's factual. We've got to say he prioritized celebrity, fame, the reality TV show nature of his life over pure basketball with this move. He did.
I don't totally buy that. I will say we got an email from Joel Neer who said almost exactly what you said. And so I won't read it in full, but he did say the business side of this is marginal in the long run. And I find it depressing to see all these uninformed NBA writers talking up Silicon Valley and Hollywood business opportunities. Maybe I'm just tired of my consumption of the NBA, but this is what I think. It just feels lame. LeBron is chasing something impure than basketball dominance. His means are to another end than basketball glory. So you basically agree with that, correct?
No, I mean, the first part is a totally different question about, you know, is he going to really be able to profit from this and all that? But I agree with his... I think it's going to be a smashing success, Andrew. I mean, anytime you put a star this big, this good at the top of his craft on this type of a platform, I mean, he's made for LA. You know, the last question of his final press conference at the end of the season in Cleveland, he was asked if he ever wanted to own an NBA team. And instead of just giving a platitude, Andrew, instead of just giving the like, oh, one day I'll try to do it, he starts off by going to his photographic memory bank and he starts listing off the guys who were on the highest paid athletes list that he had just read apparently on the internet. Yeah. And he noted that he was only sixth and Floyd Mayweather, the boxer, was number one. And he was almost like in awe that Floyd Mayweather could make $252 million in a year. Now, here's what I'm saying. So what he is going to LA in pursuit of LeBron the brand, you know, basically world takeover. That's what he's hoping for. And I think that comes with an expense, right? This is not the best basketball situation he could have found. You're never going to convince me that KCP...
You know, hold on.
You're never going to convince me KCP, Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee, and the Lakers youngsters are the ideal basketball fit for LeBron James. There's just no way you're going to be able to convince me of that fact. Well, and that's fine. I'm not saying he has to do it. I'm not judging him. Look, Andrew, if I was like you, okay, I would still be hung up on this decision in 2020 and angry about LeBron, just like how you treated KD. Oh, he didn't prioritize basketball. Look, the bottom line is I'm already over it. I can't wait to see LeBron in the Lakers uniform. I think he's going to be a smashing success, but if he wanted to put basketball first, he wouldn't have settled on LA.
I do not agree with that. I really don't. I think that the business advantages of this move have been overstated. They are a factor, but they were not the determinative factor. And I, in large part because LeBron has already successfully grown his brand and empire from Cleveland, from Miami. I mean, he's the biggest celebrity in the world right now.
But Cleveland had nothing else to give him, right? I mean, isn't that part of this move? It's like he took Cleveland as far as they
could. In a basketball context, not a business context.
Off the court too, though. Oh, off the court too.
I mean, maybe, but it was all of this started. I think he may have stayed in Cleveland had there been a viable path for the Cavs to kind of replenish the roster and get some more talent in there to really battle the Warriors. And I just think, you know, if you look at this, I do think that part of the appeal with this Lakers situation is that it's 180 degrees different from what Durant did with Golden State. And I think that matters to LeBron, and he wants to be seen as coming in there and building a new empire. I think when all of this and building a new super team, really, that's what we're talking about. All of this, that when this is all over.
When does the super part come? I mean, when's the super part come?
Well, be patient. It's been, what, like 24 hours? They're going to trade for Kawhi. That's a start, certainly. I think that's part of what's interesting about it, though, is like how successful will LeBron be in recruiting players like Klay Thompson? Like Klay and Kyrie are free agents next summer. I don't think that they're going to want to play with LeBron. I mean, Kyrie, we have documented evidence that he doesn't want to play with LeBron, but I don't think Klay is necessarily going to want to make that move. And we may get to a point where LeBron has to kind of lower his standards and settle for a guy like Chris Middleton or DeMar DeRozan, like B-list superstars. No shots at your guy Middleton, but I'm saying, like, I don't know whether the A-list guys are going to want to come join him.
Lucky to have a Chris Middleton right now, Andrew. He'd kill for a Chris Middleton.
Certainly.
So you're saying he's going to trade for Kawhi. So that means what? Ingram's out of the picture. I'm saying the best case scenario on the basketball court this year, it's LeBron, Kawhi, and like DeMarcus Cousins. That's the best group he can put together right now, right?
I don't think they're going to sign DeMarcus Cousins. I think
it's a two-headed team. It's LeBron and Kawhi. How far is that team going? They're not going to make the Western Conference Finals.
I don't think that anyone can look at the state of the league right now and try to contort their roster into a team that it's going to beat the Warriors. Does that make sense? Like, I think any,
yeah, so you're
any
agreeing.
Rational person will look at 2019 and say, all right, Golden State's probably going to get another one, and let's load up for 2020. And that's what the Lakers can do. That's what they were selling him. Paul George could have gone there and accelerated the process, but I really do think, and this is why on the last podcast I said, look, LeBron's going to go there regardless of who else is committed, because he wants to go and build something new. And the Lakers have a lot of the same advantages that the Cavs did in 2014. And that's why I've heard a number of people talk about this as not the best basketball situation. And to me, sounds like bullshit. Like, I'm sorry, like going to Houston and playing with a broken down CP3 and James Harden and PJ
Get
Tucker.
Out of here,
like,
dude.
No,
come on.
I'm
this
serious.
This Lakers fan thing that you're doing is going way too far. You think, okay, what's your best five next year for LeBron on the Lakers? Stack it up against what it would have been in the Spurs or the Celtics or the Sixers or the Rockets. The only worst basketball fit for LeBron next year in 2019, if he's truly committed to chasing titles and running with the Warriors, the only worst basketball fit among his options than the Lakers was the Cavs. And thankfully, he didn't choose the Cavs because none of us could have watched it. And I don't think he wanted to live that again.
Listen. You're thinking in two dimensions, okay? You got to get to the 3D level here. I'm serious. You're thinking in a very linear way here, whereas LeBron
point blank, are they going to make the Western Conference Finals next year? Let's bet on it.
Probably not. And I think LeBron recognized that coming in.
Boom, done. All right.
There's
your third dimension.
No, if your question is how can LeBron win a title next year in 2019... then the answer was go to Boston. Find a way to go to Boston. See if Danny Ainge will trade Kyrie. That wasn't appealing to LeBron. And I think it wasn't appealing because he doesn't want to do what KD did. He cares about his place in history. He cares about the way all of this is perceived. And the Lakers have a ton of upside, which for some reason you're not acknowledging. And you're not the only one, so I don't mean to single you out, but like...
No, go ahead and single me out, because you're talking in circles. Does he care about winning? Does he care about being the man, or does he want to be famous? I mean, it sounds to me like he's going to LA because he wants to be the hero. He wants to write a story. He wants to be in the center of it. And look, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, oh well, he'll just blame how good the Warriors are, and you're going to let him off the hook in a year or two if it doesn't pan out. Look,
no,
I'm saying, tell me, how good can this team really Philly be? Put this team together. All you're saying is he's not going to get Kyrie. He didn't get Paul George. He's not going to get Klay Thompson next summer. He doesn't want DeMarcus Cousins. Okay, great. So who is he getting, Andrew? Who are these players who are magically going to put him up on that level where he's going to be able to build something that's really worth talking about on the basketball court? I'm not taking away from his decision at all. I am very excited to go to every single one of his games, media day, the circus, all of it. I'm into it. But you cannot try to pitch me on this idea that the Lakers are going to be a great basketball fit when it's him and a bunch of, you know, misfit toys right now and young, unproven players. This team is not going to be that good in the Western Conference. This is not the Eastern Conference.
Don't put words in my mouth, okay? What I'm saying is LeBron absolutely still cares about winning. He still cares about beating the Warriors. He cares about beating them on his own terms, and that's what the Lakers were selling. That's what.
He's not going to beat them on his terms. That's the lesson we have from these last 2 years.
Exactly, and I think that is what is really interesting about this. Is like when I've thought this through, I don't see this ending very well for LeBron. I think the Lakers are going to be a huge challenge. The West is much tougher than the East.
Slow down. I can't even keep up. So it's going to be hard now. You just told me it's a great situation with amazing upside and all the stars who are going to go there, and I'm sleeping on it. Now, 5 seconds later, you're saying they've got nothing else?
I am not being a hypocrite in any sense of the word, okay? There's nuance to what's happening here. I don't understand why it has to be black and white. What I'm telling you is that LeBron is not suddenly punting on the basketball side just to focus on business and living in nice weather and letting his kids go to school in LA. I think that this is a really audacious move from a basketball standpoint. He's trying to build another super team from scratch when he's older, his influence is waning, and it's gonna be really tough to pull off because also the Warriors are fucking impossible. And so that's a whole other issue. But
yeah, no, you're making the excuses for him when he doesn't do it. I hear you. But look, when you're making your priority of checklist, what was the most important thing with this decision, right? Something had to give. There was no perfect solution for him in any of these spots.
Uh-huh.
You can't convince me that the most important thing to him was beating the Warriors, and that's why he chose the Lakers. You just cannot convince me of that. The number one factor might have been his family, might have been wanting to live in LA. My take is it's money and fame. And extending himself, you know, putting himself, you know, in position to, you know, rival the Magics and the Michaels of the world off the court from a business sense. I mean, that's my read on it.
Yep.
There's no argument to be made that his number one priority with this decision was beating the Warriors on the court. You can't make that case.
You know what? I honestly, to me, I think LA checked a lot of different boxes that were important to him. And beating the Warriors is still either at the top of that list or near the top of that list. And I think it's much higher than you're acknowledging. And it strictly is a function of how he does it. And now that's always been important to LeBron, okay? Like he's always wanted to do things in sort of a revolutionary way. And that's part of his mystique. And so, no, he wasn't going to just go play for the Rockets and try to beat the Warriors and probably fail down there, by the way. And the Sixers thing might have made sense had they been able to get Kawhi, but in a basketball context, like, I still don't love the fit with any of those guys.
Yeah, no, I know. The fit with him and Lance Stephenson and JaVale is so much cleaner than him, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid. Yeah, you're right.
Look,
there. You're
if
totally
you're
right.
Going to spend the entire podcast talking about the current Lakers roster as if that's the team we're going to be watching LeBron on for the next 3 years, then I don't know what to say. No,
that's just the best players they could pull to get with them right now. I mean, that was their big power move.
Let's go back to 2014 and talk about the Cavs with Kyrie and Dion Waiters and Anthony Bennett and like July 10th, 2014, we could have been like, well, LeBron just wants to go home and this is all kind of a marketing thing and he doesn't really care about winning. I mean,
definitely not. No, what we were saying in 2014, at least I was, is LeBron is so much better in his prime than anyone else in the Eastern Conference that he could be on any team. It doesn't matter. He will go to the finals in the East. And at that point, people were already speculating about the possibility of, you know, adding Kevin Love. And at that point, the question was, are they going to have the best offense in NBA history? That was the question that offseason. I mean, guys like Kevin Pelton and myself were, you know, trying to crunch the numbers and determine how great their offense would be. Little did we know at that time Golden State was going to come through 2 years later and basically smash every record in the books. We're not going to be saying that about the Lakers, Andrew. Even if you give them Kawhi Leonard, I'm going to give you Kawhi Leonard in this conversation. We're not going to be saying, are the Lakers going to have the best offense in NBA history? Are they going to, no matter what, get through the Western Conference? The conversation is going to be, are they going to, you know, win a playoff series or two? And is LeBron going to have enough to do it, to beat a team like Houston and Golden State in the playoffs? That's going to be where the conversation stands. And part of that is because LeBron is 4 years older, but part of that is because this Lakers group just isn't that good. It's not their fault. They've been rebuilding for years. They just don't have that much talent on hand.
Yeah, but I also think a big part of that is that the league has changed, okay? I mean, had he stayed in the East on that Cleveland team, he would have lost to Boston next spring. He would have maybe lost to Philly next spring. And
yeah, that's the only situation that was worse from a basketball standpoint than the Lakers.
But my only point is that, like, the idea of staying in the East because you care about winning. I mean, look, put LeBron on the Sixers, and there's no guarantee that they beat that Boston team next year. Oh my gosh. No, I'm serious. And here's the thing.
You're really, really deep into this Brad Stevens game, man. Jeez Louise. Ever since Kelly Olynyk broke your heart, you've just become this unbelievable Celtics fan.
I really don't feel great about it. But to go back to 2014, we were talking about the Cavs having the best offense in NBA history. And what turned out happening that year was that the Warriors kind of exploded on the scene, and the Warriors had the best offense in NBA history, and they were the ones who revolutionized the NBA. And they are, then 2 years later, they got Kevin Durant and became completely unstoppable. And I think what happened this summer is that, number one, LeBron didn't have any perfect options. He looked at LA. LA presented all kinds of different advantages that made them attractive, a lot of which were rooted in basketball. And LeBron recognized that it's going to take more than a year and maybe 2 years to beat this Warriors team and to win another title, which I think is really important to him. And doing it in LA would be a huge deal. And I honestly think if he can somehow find a way to put together a title team out there, by the end of this Lakers run, we will be talking about him as like the most dominant player the NBA has ever seen. He'll be above Jordan, and he will have been a fixture of the league for 20 years, and most of which he will have been the best player on the planet. And it'll just be crazy to think about. So, like, that's what's possible for him in LA. And I don't know if he'll get there, because I also think that, like, LeBron's game has slipped in some subtle ways, and other stars don't necessarily give him the deference that he once got from them. And so, I'm not super bullish on how this all plays out for him, but I do think that this was like very much an audacious basketball decision.
I mean, audacious in that he's going to be out there on the court with, you know, a bunch of guys who are a lot worse than him, and he's going to stand out from the pack. I mean, you're mentioning this whole generational thing earlier. Another great example is the way Philly responded to LeBron's decision. Joel Embiid's just popping shots saying, you know, LA belongs to Kobe and Magic. I mean, immediately out of the gate. I mean, like you're saying, no deference, no respect. Right. You think that they're real heartbroken in Philadelphia about not getting LeBron? No. Could we have said that 3 or 4 years ago about a team in that situation who would have the chance to be a finalist for LeBron? I mean, those teams were gutted when they didn't get him. And so, I think that shows the shifting perception of LeBron. And, you know, this pipe dream scenario of him bringing a title to LA, I mean, it does sound beautiful. I would still like to hear your path for how that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, Andrew, if I could fly, you know, I mean, if I could just like jetpack up and stand on top of the Eiffel Tower, that'd be a huge deal too.
Well, let me ask you this, okay? He was already very close. If Paul George had gone to the Lakers and they traded for Kawhi, they are right there at 1A with the Warriors, right? And that Western Conference Finals would be a bloodbath. You don't think so?
No, they'd be 1C, I think. But, you know, I would say 3. They'd be 3. But that would be a much better team than what he's going to have this season.
Once you put Kawhi on the team, you're one superstar away. Whether that's Klay Thompson or, I mean, it's not... Again, Chris Middleton does not fit the bill, but... They will have room to maneuver, and I think. Look, again, I'm not high on LeBron, but I am also wary of writing him off, and I'm surprised by how easily you're willing to do it. I thought like He's found ways to pull Andrew, super teams out of thin air before.
He wrote himself off, Andrew. I mean, you know, with this decision, he said, I want other things besides basketball. And that's what he did. I mean, let's just be honest about it. It's fine.
With that. Yeah. I mean, we just don't agree. That is fine.
How many wins do you think they're going to get next year?
The current roster, again, like, I think.
Yeah.
You
don't want to admit how bad the current roster is. That's a problem. So you keep dragging your feet. My next question is going to be this.
You're driving me insane.
He's going to be in LA in for 4 years, right?
Yes.
How many of those years are going to be a legit title window with him as the number one guy? Answer those two questions for me.
Well, I think
his title window
point,
is right now. He's got basically, in my opinion, 2 years. Yeah. For a title window. And I don't think he's going to be able to put together this team that you're thinking about in time to get that done. And then in terms of how many wins next season, you know, if they add Kawhi, I would say that they're going to be around 52. If they don't add Kawhi, I would say they're going to be around 46.
Yeah, I would guess 45 wins. And I am going to be fascinated to watch LeBron in the West because he can't just coast for 3 months of the season out there. And so I don't know how that's going to play. I don't trust Lonzo. Lonzo is the shot like 25% from three last year. I'm sorry. There are a lot of people who like Lonzo. I'm not in on Lonzo. And I'm curious as to see whether they make it to December 25th with him still on the roster. But I just think the idea, we basically agree. You and I are both kind of skeptical about how this is going to actually look for LeBron once the games start. I just don't think that he's doing this from a place of apathy. I think that he is really
saying it's apathy. It's not apathy. No one's saying that.
To sort of conjure up the team that he wants, and that is more attractive to him than latching on to Houston or jumping in with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, who weren't great fits in a basketball context.
You keep going back to this idea, you know, narrative and story, and he's in the center of it. He wants to build something and all of that. Again, I mean, that is a different kind of priority than just saying, I'm going to chase rings no matter what. I think he's changing the terms of engagement here. I think that's the main takeaway from this decision is he is looking at his career in a different standpoint. He feels like because he got that ring in Cleveland, I mean, that's going to be the high point of his career no matter what. I know you're really excited about this idea of him winning a title in LA. First of all, I don't see that happening.
I don't think
it would be a bigger deal than the 2016 finals. I mean, that sort of is going to be his legacy mountaintop moment, right? So I think he just shifted his priorities. He changed the terms of engagement. He said, look, if I can't beat Golden State on the court, I'm going to try to win in every other avenue of my life as much as possible, and LA gives me the opportunity to do that. And if my sacrifice has to be, you know, making nice with Lance Stephenson, reaching out and recruiting Born Ready, and you know, getting really excited about poaching JaVale McGee and getting my buddy KCP paid, you know, sort of like J.R. Smith part two, then sure, cool, go ahead, let's just see where it goes. I mean, I think he's just heading he's basically heading more towards that elite career Kobe stage where it was sort of like a daily reality show where what happened on the court almost didn't matter. The press conferences were a bigger deal than the games. And obviously he's a lot better at this stage of his career than Kobe was in those final years because he hasn't been limited by injury. Yeah. But I also think he's going into a situation where he's not going to be judged next season. The conversation around LeBron is not going to be on whether or not he wins a title. He has actually kind of alleviated some of that pressure from himself. Uh-huh. It's just going to be more about LeBron the spectacle, LeBron the story, you know, LeBron the celebrity, and that's going to be what drives the conversation around him. Again, I'm not faulting him for it. I just think we need to admit that and agree on that because there were other situations, other ways he could have tried to put this together. That would have involved a much better chance of winning in the short term.
Yeah, I don't totally agree. I think that the 2019 Warriors are untouchable and LeBron is thinking more long term.
But
so.
Andrew, you just told me they're going to win 45 games and they're probably not going to win a title while he's there. We can construct scenarios very easily. What he could have gone other places and won a lot more than 45 games. And look, I know you're used to those AAA standards out there in the Eastern Conference where 45 games, you probably hang a banner in Washington for that, right? But 45 wins in the Western Conference, that's a bubble team, you know? You may not even be in with 45 wins, right? So I think you're kind of saying two things at once here to me a little bit. And you know, I guess I'm getting the sense that you want to believe in like LeBron's mission. You want to believe that the best case scenario could be possible. And I guess that's okay. I just think the logic doesn't follow to me. I don't exactly get where you're saying
I believe the winning's coming from. I believe LeBron believes in his greatest mission. I am a little skeptical, but I acknowledge that, look, if he goes out there under a microscope in LA and we watch him spend the next year or two building a team that can take down Golden State, the most dominant team we've seen in like 30 years, like that's going to be a huge deal. Okay. It's going to be a massive thing for him, for the league, for NBA history. And I can understand why that's appealing to him. I also think that a lot of what you're saying is really interesting to me. And to go back to like the email from Jolnir, I think a lot of people are going to look at this as sort of a depressing reality TV type move where, look, if he doesn't win, it's going to get dark really quickly because it's going to be like, wait a second, why the hell is LeBron on the basketball Yankees? I mean, look, he bought himself so much goodwill going back to the Cavs. He was essentially immune to criticism the past couple years. That luxury disappears now that he's on the Lakers. And if they start to lose and he gets impatient and he, you know, orders Luke Walton fired, like, a lot of people are just going to get tired of this and get tired of him. And so that there's significant downside that I'm sure he acknowledges. I feel like the way the announcement was rolled out is a reflection of his understanding that, like, you know what, this is not the time to like make a big spectacle out of all this, and let me just go to the Lakers, keep it understated, and check back in October, which I think is a really smart play and a reminder that Rich Paul and those guys know what they're doing. But your concerns are valid. And look, if it doesn't work, this is exactly how people are going to play it or how people are going to view it, which is to say, look, this whole thing was a bummer and I wish LeBron's career hadn't ended this way.
I'm not even in that camp. Well, first of all, I think his move with the press release and kind of stepping away, I think he just realized like that's a story that sells itself. Like, you know, he just let it speak for itself. Like that's such a big, you know, nuclear bomb on the NBA universe. It's like, what else is he going to say, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the callback to like, you know, the famous facts and all that.
It's awesome.
So I guess, again, I'm finding a way to disagree with you, which is fascinating here. I'm not sure.
I'm trying to like, find common ground, man. Work with me.
No, forget the common ground. But I don't see the depressing side so much or like the legacy spoiling side or anything like that.
I think it's going to get bleak. Look, we haven't seen LeBron fail, man. I mean, if he's not in the finals for a couple years, it's going to be really, really strange. We've spent the past decade with this guy at the center of the sport. It's going to be weird to see him kind of marginalized. He's not Kobe. He's a level above him.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I also think he's sort of built in the excuse for himself. He's going to a team that doesn't have a lot. They're going to be a new team. So if he doesn't make the finals next year, people are going to give him a pass, I think, in a way that they wouldn't have given him a pass in the past years. If he's not able to attract the talent, what we've seen in Los Angeles is that sort of like the cult of personality or the idol worship just fills in all the gaps, right? So the storytelling that would go on around LeBron would be similar to what we saw, you know, throughout the 2018 postseason of, oh, this is his most unbelievable accomplishment. Oh, he beat Boston. Like, he overcame Terry Rozier. God, that was so incredible. Like, yeah. We're going to get a whole new dose of that if he's able to, like, knock the Nuggets out in, like, a first-round playoff series, right?
You might 2 years be right. From now. Look, there are a lot of people who are, at this point, very invested in protecting the myth of LeBron. And maybe that will carry over to LA. I just can definitely see a scenario where, you know, they win 45 or 50 games or Kawhi shows up and he's not the player he was in San Antonio and the whole thing kind of goes sideways and everyone looks at LeBron and it's like, wait a second, like, you know, you Kevin Love was half the player he was in Minnesota, in large part because of you, and Kyrie left because of you, and Paul George would be here and would make you guys a contender, but he didn't want to play with you. And I could absolutely see a version of this where LeBron starts to take a little bit more heat, and the conversation changes as he struggles.
Yeah, I think there was a disconnect, like, at the end of Kobe's year between the people who were covering it and then some of the fan base that, you know, some of the NBA fan base that sort of backlashed against it. It's like, why are we talking about Kobe? He's so irrelevant. His team's terrible. He's shooting like 6-for-20. Mm-hmm. Like, Kobe had such a captivating personality, you know, being there for a lot of the home games during his retirement tour. It never got old. It was always interesting. It was always captivating. And I basically never cared about wins and losses. And Andrew, you know me, I'm a reality-based person who really cares about results, right?
Well, and also... It
was more about the experience, right? And so I guess my point here is this. Like, as LeBron potentially fades here over the course of this contract, he is going to remain captivating. He's only going to get more captivating because he's going to care less. He's going to shoot from the hip more. He's going to have his tentacles in even more avenues, whether it's, you know, the music industry, films, and so on and so forth. And you remember, here's our common ground for you, Andrew. You remember the amazing moment of LeBronzo in Las Vegas, where we were there seated and LeBron walks into the gym and we all got, you know, tingles and goosebumps because he's there watching Lonzo and, you know, Ben Simmons is there kind of hobnobbing and all eyes in the gym are on LeBron.
Yeah.
That sensation is not going anywhere. And that's why I'm actually pretty excited about this LeBron in LA experience, both next year and beyond. Regardless of how much he succeeds on the court, I think it's going to be utterly fascinating to track day in, day out. I don't think it's going to get old. I do think there's a chance that he has a new backlash, sort of the anti-Yankees type backlash that you're mentioning.
Yeah.
But I think the vast majority of people are just going to continue to deify him because look what Kobe got away with in those final years. I mean, the guy was making like $30 million. Nobody wanted to play with him. He was shooting like 20% from the field. He never got back in transition defense. And LeBron's obviously not going to be at that level for at least the duration of this four-year contract,
okay,
right? So that's why I think it's going to still be fascinating.
Here's the thing. Two points in response there. Number one, I worry with LeBron that he will turn into kind of like basketball Brett Favre, where there's just so much annual drama that dominates headlines and dominates SportsCenter because everybody still clicks on this stuff. Like, it just... I can see normal people being like, all right, look, this guy isn't even going to make the conference finals. I don't care. Just like get him out of my life. So there's going to be some fatigue regardless. And then not only that, I hear what you're saying about Kobe, but Kobe was also more criticized over the last 5 years of his career than probably any Hall of Famer ever. So he took his fair share of heat from all kinds of different people and smart people throughout basketball media.
I'll say this though, Andrew, never to his face, you know?
That's
like,
true.
The cocoon around Kobe in LA, I mean, it was, you know, you can make whatever biblical allusion you want to make. I mean, the guy was basically untouchable among the group that followed him. And that's what's amazing about that LA platform. It's like, there's so many media at these games. No one's going to be pushing back, you know, against anything that LeBron says because LeBron's going to be the meal ticket just like Kobe was. And there's, I mean, the ability to spread that message, you know, far and wide is going to be, you know, it's unmatched. I mean, there's nowhere else he would be able to have that same impact that he's going to have in LA. I think Kobe proved it. And look, there's going to be the backlash, those people for sure, but it's going to be on the outer edges, right? He's going to be sort of protected. I guess that's my read on it. I mean, he may find some way to screw this up, but I doubt it because he's really, really media savvy, like you mentioned earlier, and he's, you know, played the rest of his career, you know, pretty much without, you know, major mistakes on that front, you know, from a PR standpoint. He even got over the decision. I mean, I don't think he's going to do anything as bad as the decision again, right? So
I wonder about this because LeBron, at this point in his career, he's almost like a political figure and he is so meaningful to so many people and particularly around the media because I think a lot of us kind of grew up and can trace our maturity in the evolution of our LeBron takes. And so I wonder whether people are willing to kind of distance themselves from that version of this story and look at some of his flaws. And it that's one of the things I'm curious about going into the next couple of years, because I do think there's going to be room for criticism. Before we move on to a couple more specific questions, I just want to say that, and I wrote about this today, so I'm sort of repeating myself, but I am pretty excited about this because I think it's going to be the toughest challenge of his career, and the odds are against him for a variety of reasons. And, I don't think he can pull it off and actually succeed in LA and find a way to make this situation not depressing, just because, look, he's in year 15 trying to be the catalyst for a super team that could beat the best super team we've ever seen. And like, that's really tough to do. So I don't think he can do it, but I'm excited to watch him try. And it's something that is more audacious than just jumping on to the team that lost the Western Conference Finals or fucking the Sixers. Like, the only reason I would want him on the Sixers is to watch the Rights to Ricky Sanchez guys eventually go to war with LeBron and Rich Paul. I think that would have been fun. But given the options on the board, I'm excited for LeBron on the Lakers.
I don't know why you buried your reasonable take 50 minutes into an argument, Andrew. I mean, you're standing for the Lakers for like 45 minutes, and you came back around to exactly where I was the whole time.
You came out so negative about this, being like, look, LeBron just chose the money. He took the easy way out. It's like I'm doing the podcast Bayless.
No, I did not say he took the easy way out. I definitely didn't say that.
Okay.
But I did say his priority changed.
Yeah, and I think that some of that is
fame
true.
And celebrity was his, was his major driving factor here. I think that's a fair thing to say. I mean, look, this guy is so much bigger than basketball. I mean, you called him a politician. I mean, he's like a celebrity politician, right? Like, he's the type of guy who's so famous that if he wanted to run for president, he could do it. Like, people would go along with it. They'd be totally fine with it. I mean, he is on that level. And I think he made a comment, just sort of a generic comment during the finals, basically the day before game four, where he's like, look, I like to compete. There's not that many places where LeBron can compete anymore, right? And one of them would be star power, influence, fame, capital, right? Like those types of things. And LA offers all of those things. And, like I'm saying, I just think he's shifting his focus. Like the competition with Golden State, I think he is out of solutions in the short term. I think losing Paul George was a body blow to his hopes to take down the Warriors this season and next year. And I think he's looking for other different avenues for competition where he can challenge himself, where he can grow, he can continue to evolve. And I think he's doing that. Hey, by the way, though, I'm going to be right about LeBron and Bronny playing together in the NBA, which I called like 3 years ago. But I think you might also remember back in January or February, I called that LeBron was going to announce this thing on Instagram. Remember that?
I did not remember that, but I believe you.
Oh, thanks a lot.
I'll take
thanks
your a word lot. For
remember,
it.
You might have remembered I did a 10,000-word story on Instagram, and I said this would be the year that a major free agent, possibly LeBron James, would make his announcement on Instagram. I wish he had done it on Instagram Live, just with like a real quick like 30-second clip to really personalize it, but... The fact that he got it on the gram, he did it for the gram, I was feeling pretty special about myself yesterday.
You know what? I don't want to fact check you here because I feel like we're getting to a healthier place as a podcast duo. Things were touch and go about 20 minutes ago. But, I mean, I think most people consume the news on Twitter, though. Is that correct?
I thought they put the announcement up on Instagram first, and his first statement to Ohio was on...
technically correct. You're right. I saw the Clutch Sports. Actually, what happened was my aunt text messaged me after her nephew or my cousin had never mind. whatever.
Yeah, very cool. I didn't realize she was in the NBA media. That's fascinating. Really
I
cool
saw
story.
The Clutch Sports tweet. It's my point. But yeah, you know what I like about LeBron and the whole business side of this? Is LeBron is actually really good at business, and his Clutch Sports people have done a really good job. And generally, when you hear about athletes making forays into investing, and it's kind of just window dressing at best. And, like, God only knows what KD is sinking his money into in Silicon Valley. But I do kind of have faith that LeBron is going to end up being a billionaire before too long, because that's just sort of where this is trending. And he's done a good job sinking money into good investments that pay out in with equity and the entertainment side of things. Like, I'm not sure I'll ever really be interested in watching his movies, but I think a lot of people do. So hats off to him. This is a very random point, but just a passing thought I had.
No, I can't wait for the merchandising aspect either. I mean, you'll remember Kobe's last game. They handed out like Kobe drones.
Yeah.
Remember that? Like the action figure drones. Look, LeBron's going to have to top that. I don't know what kind of crazy three-dimensional drone they're going to be giving away to fans with LeBron's picture on it, or you know, how many different jersey color combinations that Nike's going to be able to concoct, or how many different, you know, sneaker colorways. You remember I was calling it out like the Palos Verdes green colorway last summer. We were imagining all the different possibilities. It's going to be over the top. And that's what the Kobe experience was too. Like, you got as much Kobe as you could possibly handle, no matter how diehard of a Kobe fan you were. You know, like, if you're that guy in China who like names his child Kobe, you know, tattooed Kobe's face on your back, you know, you cry when he comes and visits on the Nike tour, Nike and Kobe and the Lakers combined during those last couple of years to give you, to force feed you such a steady diet of Kobe stuff that you were always going to be satisfied, right?
Yeah.
That's what's coming here with LeBron in LA.
Well, okay. So speaking of branding, let's return to a topic that we touched on earlier. Mako says, last summer, Ben threw out a wish disguised as a joke, and he called it LeBronzo. He then followed that up with the reverse jinx of campaigning for LeBron to join the monastery in San Antonio, which effectively spoke LeBron to LA into existence, further solidifying the value of Ben's place covering the NBA in Los Angeles. Well executed, Ben Golliver. So how do we feel about the state of LeBronzo? We've done a lot of big picture discussion, but let's talk about a couple specifics here at the end. What do you think Lonzo's future is with the Lakers?
Well, first of all, you know, the news of his knee injury coming out and how he's going to have surgery to clean up his meniscus and all that, you know, popping right in the middle of like the Paul George and LeBron frenzy, to me, that was not coincidental. I mean, I think that was like their major card to play to do whatever they could to sort of dissuade a trade.
Yeah.
And I think from that standpoint, you know, LeVar is just praying that Lonzo is not a casualty of this takeover, right? And I think I could see it both ways. Like, I still think that there's, you know, it's somewhat interesting to conceive of Lonzo and LeBron together. I mean, obviously, Lonzo is an incredible hit-ahead passer. LeBron loves to feast in those kind of transition opportunities. You know, Kevin Love used to set him up. Lonzo would be able to do that.
Yeah.
Lonzo doesn't dominate the ball. I mean, he really did not do that well last year as a high pick-and-roll player. I mean, that's sort of what you expect from young point guards to be able to, you know, do right out of the gate. That wasn't his strength. I mean, he was much better cutting, moving, hitting the open man, generating pace. I mean, those were sort of his strengths. And those are all things that, you know, in theory would play well off of LeBron. I think the big question mark, obviously, is his jumper. It was coming into last season. It will be coming into this season. I don't know if he's going to be able to get it right enough to be that knockdown, you know, catch and shoot type threat around LeBron. And that becomes the issue, because I think, you know, as LeBron gets older, he needs more and more space. I mean, that's just going to be, you know, a prerequisite. And so he's going to want to be surrounded by shooters a lot.
Yep.
And I think Lonzo's defensive ability is helpful, but he needs to become a passable shooter if he wants to play big minutes with LeBron. Personally, if I was the Lakers, I would not trade Lonzo. I would give this a shot, because I think when you're talking about the upside for this team, the upside that I don't necessarily see, I actually think Lonzo could play a pretty central role in that, right? Like, if Lonzo becomes sort of closer to the best case scenario type of player,
yeah,
than what we saw last year where he was injured a lot and just kind of up and down and streaky shooting and all of that, this team gets a lot more interesting really quickly, right? That's one path for them to really ramp up here.
I don't see that happening. I'd love to see it happen. I think Lonzo's game, it fits really well in theory if he can hit 37 or 40% from three, because he's a great secondary passer. And if you kick to him on the wing, like, he is such an awesome touch passer. You know, they probably are not going to want to play very fast at this point in LeBron's career, but Lonzo's great at that as well. And it would just be a really fun wrinkle to throw him in as like a viable starter. I just don't think he's there on a in a playoff setting, which is a bummer. But I agree with you. Like the timing of that MCL news was really shady, and I apparently it was a pre-existing injury, but when it hit, I was imagining LeVar like sneaking in the middle of the night with a scalpel trying to keep his son in Los Angeles. It was really messed up. But look, it does look like Lonzo is probably going to be on the roster at the beginning of the year, which is a win. It's a win for us as a podcast after we kind of had our fever dream in Vegas a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, actually, which I don't know. I mean, what do you remember about that night? That, because I was thinking back to that because a number of people hit us up on Twitter and in the emails about LeBronzo, and like that was one of the worst podcasts I thought that we'd ever recorded because it was such a strange scene. And neither one of us did a very good job capturing what it was like. We basically just sat there like bouncing wild conspiracy theories off each other and giggling for like 30 minutes. But can you try to give people a coherent version of what that night in Vegas was like?
Well, why are you so hard on this? Jeez, God, a little dark.
Well, no, I just
one
remember
of our
walking.
Worst podcast. Jeez, I didn't realize. You know, save that for your burner accounts when you email into our openfloormail@gmail.com to talk trash to me.
What
come
I'm
on,
saying
man.
Is, I remember walking out of your hotel room thinking to myself that may have been more fun for us than it was for anyone to listen to. But look, I had a great time.
No
That's
way.
All that matters.
Look, you just had a hard time wrapping your mind around the name LeBronzo. You hated it at first. You let it sink in, and then you loved it.
You know what? No, I still hate it, but I love that you came up with it first because now LeBronzo is mainstream. First, Colin Cowherd stole it from you, and now ESPN is using it. LeBronzo is going global, and it started on the Open Floor podcast.
What I remember is us, you know, having our courtside seats in Summer League. And look, guys, I'm not bragging. It's Summer League, okay? So it's not like we get these fantastic, like, seats next to Jack Nicholson or anything. But the big story at the time was, like, what shoes would Lonzo wear? Remember, he kept changing his shoes, like, every single night. And that night, LeBron was in attendance, and Lonzo randomly is wearing Nikes. Well, obviously not randomly, right? And so this huge story of like, is Nike about to swoop Lonzo? Like, is he going to turn his back on his father for his new surrogate father, LeBron? Like, it all seemed to be happening, right? Lonzo looked kind of nervous playing in front of LeBron. As I mentioned earlier, Simmons was there. It was the first time in basically 10 years of covering Summer League, and I mean, I've been there since the beginning when it was in like the small dusty gym in the back where the only people who went were executives, a few really sketchy media members, and then they would have to bus in these kids from local elementary schools to fill the seats. They just gave them free tickets and just let them scream the whole time. So it was the first time in my entire history of going to Summer League where it felt like this was actually where the action was. And look, I saw like a Darnell Valentine game winner where the crowd erupted. I saw, you know, these crazy different guys, you know, Josh Selby explode. I mean, there was these, I saw Nate Robinson get his Summer League jersey retired.
Totally.
If you can believe it, they hung it up on the Raptors. But this was like the first time where Summer League was actually the center of the basketball and maybe even the sporting universe. And it was like too good to be true. It was like, wow, like LeBron's really gracing us with his presence. He's obviously planting some seeds here for a potential LA move because that had broken about a month earlier.
Yep.
At that point, I was still very skeptical of him going to LA because I thought the basketball stuff would win out and I just didn't see how LA was going to be in that position. But it was just one of those moments where there was a certain electricity in the crowd. And you know, Andrew, I think LeBron felt it too, right? Like, I think that he is pulled to like the brands, the Yankees brand, the Cowboys brand. Like, he gets, you know, that kind of power that those, you know, companies, businesses, organizations wield.
Yeah.
I think he understands that intuitively. And I think, you know, he's probably sitting there watching Lonzo, feeling the electricity in the crowd and thinking, man, like, this is more lit than you know, some regular season games that I've played in, right? Like we had fans leaving Heat games during the finals. Like these guys are all like standing and cheering for Lonzo Ball's like, you know, triple double in Summer League. I mean, come on.
It was pretty nuts. And for people who have never been to Summer League, what happens is since it's in Vegas, you end up with crowds that are like 80% Lakers fans who just drive out for the day or the weekend. And it's fun. Like, I enjoy that. I enjoy ridiculous Lakers fans. And so that night, though, they were so loud. They were chanting for LeBron, like, throughout the game. And he was sitting there next to Ben Simmons, my guy DeJounte Murray. I talked to Sam Hinkie before the game began, which was kind of a bigger moment for me because we had crossed paths a bunch of times and I had been really hard on the Sixers. But then before the LeBronzo game, I ran into Sam Hinkie and had a great like 10-minute conversation with him. And then, but he was also with Lynn Merritt, though. LeBron, not Sam Hinkie, but Lynn Merritt, who's like the head of Nike and one of the more powerful...
Thanks for that clarification.
Yeah. So he's one of the more powerful, like, shadow power players of the NBA. And so sitting there with Lakers fans just, like, serenading LeBron and Lynn Merritt, I don't know, I connected a lot of dots as far as conspiracy theories are concerned. And my favorite part of it was that you, for one night, were all in on every possible conspiracy theory involving Lonzo, Lynn Merritt, and LeBron and LA. And lo and behold, we should have known. I mean, that's exactly where we are today.
No, they all came true. No, I love how you clarified how LeBron was there with Lynn Merritt, not Sam Hinkie. Yeah, Michael Jordan was there with the Amar'e shot, not Albert Einstein. Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, well... anyways, I'm glad I will always laugh my ass off thinking about that night. And now it is probably 10 times funnier now that all this has actually happened. So, I appreciate LeBron's decision for it, for that reason, if for no other. Couple other questions.
Yeah, well, Andrew, it's going to be even 10 times funnier when, you know, LeBron basically turns to LeVar and tells him to shut the F up during a Lakers game when, you know, he points and screams at Lonzo for not getting back to cover his man on defense or not, you know, switching out to the guy he's supposed to be guarding, you know, three-point shooter, gives him that death look that he used to always give, you know, J.R. Smith and Tristan and Kevin Love. I mean, this memory of ours, the LeBronzo game, is only going to get richer the longer this partnership lasts. And I just want to say this, Magic, please, I don't ask for a lot, Magic, don't trade Lonzo. We need this.
We need at least a couple months. You can Dion Waiters him in December and we'll be fine. But let me ask you this, and that's actually a great place to kind of wrap this up. How much influence do you think LeBron is going to be wielding in LA? Because look, again, I think the Lakers have been really smart, and part of me puts the Lance and JaVale signings, not to mention KCP, Mr. Clutch, or I think I saw someone on Twitter refer to him as Clutchtavious Caldwell Pope. I put all of that on LeBron, and maybe that's not fair, but what do you think the arrangement is going to be going forward? Because it kind of feels to me like they're turning their team over to him and Rich Paul, and I don't... that makes me less optimistic for the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been one who thinks that LeBron's orchestrating or having a heavy hand in basically all of his team's moves, right? I think you'd be foolish not to heavily consult him. You look at how the Cavaliers bent over backwards twice last year, you know, once immediately, you know, in the middle of that Kyrie Irving flap, and then again at the trade deadline. I mean, you only make those types of risky decisions and trades and moves if you're, you know, kind of under the gun from LeBron. Now, I think that they have some room to be patient. Like I mentioned, I don't think the title pressure is on them necessarily in year one. Some people might disagree. I just don't think it is. And they also have a relaxation of tension because LeBron's signed for at least 3 years, right? Yeah. So he can't really go public with any of his frustrations without looking like the bad guy and feeling stuck, right? I mean, he's there for, you know, a fairly long commitment, especially by his standards. So I don't think that they're just going to say, LeBron, you're the GM now. You know, I think both Pelinka and Magic are very smart, very shrewd. They know how the game's played. You know, they know how to handle the media. My only real beef with them in terms of what they did last year, I thought they should have been a little bit, you know, more defensive of Luke Walton when LeVar was going after him. I thought they could have been a little bit firmer in how they stood up for him.
Yeah.
But I think that LeBron's going to be very active here. And I think ultimately he has to prove me wrong here. He needs to show me that he can recruit some big time stars, whether it's this summer or next summer, to prove that he really wants to, you know, make a real run at the title. I think otherwise the ceiling for this group, you know, is not that high. And I think, you know, he's always going to be able to say, well, look, you know, I'm just a player. Like, the front office is the ones who make those kinds of decisions. But, you know, that didn't really fly for Kobe by the end. I think people really started holding Kobe accountable for some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you going to build a team around him? And I think, you know, sort of now the onus is on LeBron to prove that, one, he's willing to accept and sort of nurture and build up some of the teammates that are already there. But two, he's willing to extend whatever it takes to get, you know, new talent into the fold and to put them into a situation where they can succeed on their terms as well, rather than just succeeding on his terms.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I don't really consider myself a LeBron fan. Like, I definitely respect him, but don't really revere him the way others seem to. I save my reverence for Rodney Hood and Wayne Ellington, but I think that if I were like a LeBron diehard, I would be kind of silently praying that he is willing to just kind of cede control. And he doesn't seem like he's interested in that at this point. But look, like, if you go back to Jordan and some of the moves that he was pushing for with the Bulls, like, most great players have no idea what they're talking about when it comes to player evaluation. And like, Jordan wanted a trade for every single player who went to UNC, and lo and behold, took over the Hornets and did that. But LeBron, I hope that Pelinka and Magic are able to kind of establish a little bit of separation between church and state with some of this. And we'll see. We'll see if it happens. I think you're right that, yeah, look, he's going to have a lot of influence regardless.
Don't you think, though, that LeBron is their best asset? I mean, he could be their biggest holdup in terms of getting talent if guys are scared off, you know?
Yeah.
Or they're not buying into LeBron's vision. But he's also their best recruiting asset, or at least he should
be.
There's
no question.
With his level of connections around the league, he should be able to do that. And what I'm saying from LeBron is, I need to see more than just Instagram comments about young King, okay? I need to see some bodies in Lakers jerseys, guys who are really talented, who you can get the most out of, and go make a deep playoff run.
That's why.
I think there's some onus and pressure on LeBron from that standpoint.
I would also add, though, that, like, even if you go back to last year, like, the picks that LA used at the end of the first round on Josh Hart and Kyle Kuzma, maybe Josh Hart was a second rounder, I'm not sure, but those picks were really valuable, and traditionally LeBron has not seen the value in moves like that. And so as Pelinka and Magic try to kind of tinker on the margins, I think you're right that LeBron becomes super valuable and super important when you're trying to fill out the top of the roster. But like, the middle of these teams are important also. And that's kind of what was a big problem of the last few years in Cleveland is LeBron. You look at that team and there's like some giant holes, and it's just tough. And I think that's a LeBron problem as much as it was a Cavs problem.
It's also an age problem, don't you think? I mean, a lot of his buddies, you know, like the guys he was keeping employed,
yeah,
like Richard Jefferson, you know,
point.
Like, I mean, you have an entire team of LeBron teammates who are doing like NBA TV and ESPN Live hits now, you know what I mean? Like, all those guys are still getting paid in the media, but they're not going to be able to help him beat the Warriors next season. And that's why he's going to have to get creative and potentially shift his focus in terms of how he deals with this next group of guys. It's not easy. I mean, you don't want to be that, like, you know, substitute teacher figure, or like, you know, the cool guy, the cool chaperone at prom or something like that. I mean, I don't know exactly. No, I'm just saying, like, if you're a 35-year-old guy
among his like 26-year-old peers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, or even younger than that, like 24, like, you know, I'm the cool guy. Like, you know, what are you going to do? It's awkward.
It's a lot easier
to say.
Chris Paul went through something very similar with the Clippers and was always kind of distant from DeAndre and Blake because he was just older and wasn't interested in doing the things that they wanted to do. And maybe that's a factor too, with Dad LeBron out in LA, just like going to AAU tournaments every weekend. And I mean, who knows? As far as I can tell, Kawhi Leonard has never been to like a club in his life. So it probably isn't going to be an issue with Kawhi, but like, it's going to be an adventure. And the stuff with Magic and Pelinka is going to be an adventure, which I think to me is a good place to end this, because reasonable people can disagree as to whether this is going to be successful, but it is going to be really entertaining to watch. And so that's why I'm in. I support this decision.
No, I'm in for the same reason. There's no doubt about it. And the nice thing is, like I said, I'm not going to hold a grudge because you didn't pick the team that I wanted for 2 years. And I think you can learn something from my acceptance of LeBron here, and you could reconsider KD and understand his place in the league, the guy who chased LeBron out of Cleveland and swept him out of his hometown team. I mean, that's pretty impressive stuff.
You
but
know
Andrew,
what, man, this podcast is and has always been about my personal growth in the eyes of you. So I'm glad that we could keep building on that theme. Absolutely.
But Andrew, we got some great emails about LeBron, didn't we? I mean, we got to give a lot of credit to the Open Floor Globe for sending in all those LeBron takes. Keep them coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com.
And before you read your promo for Apple Podcasts, what I would say is Friday we will be doing a full free agency mailbag. We'll do a little bit more on LeBron, but since we've just dedicated an entire episode to talking about this, it's time to talk about Kevin Love, time to talk about the Eastern Conference, which is currently in shambles. We could talk about the future of the Cavs. We need to talk about our guy Playoff P, because I have some thoughts on that front. But yeah, we'll hit everything. So send us questions, and it should be fun. A little post 4th of July podcast.
Absolutely. I cannot wait. I will be live from Las Vegas, I believe, you know, bunkering in for Summer League. So it'll be a great time. Andrew, I don't have a script, okay? I just say the same thing every single episode because I have it committed to memory. You can go to Apple Podcasts. You can search Open Floor. That's two words. Find our page. Scroll down. It will say rate and review. Tap 5 stars. We are the Postmates of podcasts. We really appreciate your feedback. It helps us spread the word. Andrew, don't forget, you could probably pre-order NBA 2K19 with Giannis on the cover right now.
There we go.
And hopefully, maybe we can get matching copies. It'll be fantastic. Until later this week, I will talk to you.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.